From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. It's Constitution Tuesday, and that's right, class is in session. All right, coming up, the Senate confirmation process of Judge Brett Kavanaugh is about to kick into high gear. What will that look like? How long will it take? FRC's own Vice President of Government Affairs, David Christensen, is here with those answers. And then we'll talk with FRC's Vice President of Policy, Travis Weber, about some of the terminology that you'll hear next week. I say we want to prepare you for that. So when you hear these terms, what do they mean? Then we'll take a look at the issues. What issues can you expect to hear about next week when the confirmation hearing takes place? Carrie Severino, Chief Counsel of the Judicial Crisis Network, will be here on that topic. And last night I was at the White House for a dinner that President Trump and the First Lady hosted, celebrating evangelical leadership across the nation. Among the items celebrated was the restoration of religious freedom in America. And what has been a part of that? You guessed it, the courts. Kelly Shackelford, the president and CEO of First Liberty Institute, was there as well, and he joins me later here on Washington Watch. And we'll also be joined a little later by Ken Kukowski, best-selling author and attorney on this Constitution Tuesday as class is in session. All right, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. And, hey, let me remind you folks, coming up, September the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, the Values Voter Summit here in Washington, D.C. You do not want to miss this. Look, I'm telling you, folks are registering rapidly. Seats are filling up. This is your opportunity to get a seat at the Values Voter Summit. Go to TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. Okay, we are just basically 1 week away from the beginning of the confirmation hearing of Brett Kavanaugh, who the president has nominated to replace retiring Justice Anthony Kennedy. What's that look like? What's going to take place next week? How long might this process last? Joining me to talk about that, David Christensen, Vice President of Government Affairs here at the Family Research Council. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you.
Okay, what can people expect to take place next week?
Fireworks. Next week there will be fireworks. Democrats have been obstructing, throwing up every red flag they could, refusing to meet with Brett Kavanaugh after over a month and a half of opportunity. So the hearings will begin. Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Grassley is holding the hearings. They will be 3 to 4 days long, starting on September 4th. There'll be opening statements and a lot of blather from some of the senators, and then he'll get grilled, and we'll see how he does under fire.
And how long will – he won't be there all 3 or 4 days. He'll have a day. He'll be there probably
– he'll be there probably Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday, the senators will do opening statements. He will sit there and listen to every – Right. Senate committee members' comments.
Which in and of itself can be very painful, having to sit there through a day long.
With the cameras on you,
Right. So, I mean, if you scratch your head, it's going to be interpreted by some commentator or something. So it's really a very trying process.
Yeah, he knows that the world, the political world is on him and that the American people are watching him. But my understanding, he feels very comfortable in wanting to defend the Constitution. So there'll be Senate opening statements, and then there will be an opportunity for him to testify and answer questions. And that's where the real issues, the Democrats are going to try to stump him up on a variety of issues, Obamacare, Roe v. Wade, you name it. He will answer those questions. He will handle himself, I think, as he has in the past very well. He will defend constitutionalism and the need for a Supreme Court to interpret the Constitution. And then after that, there'll be experts, outside experts, for day three and four testifying against him or on behalf of him.
Yeah, I mean, I know in the past I've actually testified and been a part of those hearings back during the Obama years, testifying against some of his selection. The process has been ongoing since he was selected. I mean, right now he has been going through a process of you know, what they call these murder boards, I guess, where just basically drilling him on what might be asked. In fact, I know when I was doing that, we even went through that here just to be anticipating the questions that were asked. This is probably one of the most high-profile confirmation hearings that the Senate holds.
Yeah, and the stakes, you're absolutely right. The stakes couldn't be higher. They know that with Justice Kennedy retiring, that the balance of the Supreme Court could shift. The Democrats have nothing to lose but to stop the process. They've been demanding everything, not only from his 12 years of opinions, thousands of pages of opinions on the court, the appeals court that he's been on, but also his time as a President Bush White House staffer.
Right.
So they've been fighting on this. He submitted 120 pages of written answers to over, you know, submitted 17,000 pages of comments. He is going to get grilled on everything. And, you know, he seems, you know, from what we can tell, he's up to the task. As you said, he's going to be, you know, every break he asked for, or any comment or any pause, he'll be scrutinized. The Democrats, what they've shown is they really aren't interested in actually working with him. Remember, they put up, and the listeners need to understand this, they put up and said, we oppose nominee, and then they had an underline blank. Fill in the name. It didn't matter who President Trump was.
Yeah, before his name was announced.
Exactly.
All right, David Christensen, one final question. All right, 3 to 4 days, you've got him there 2 days. You've got 2 days of opposition and as well as support testifying. The committee wraps up. When would we expect a floor vote, and how long will this process in totality last?
Right. So after the committee meets next week and has the hearing, then they have to go to mark up his confirmation in the committee. The Democrats traditionally get to burn the hold. It'll get carried out into the following week. Then they will mark up in the Senate committee, and then Senator McConnell will immediately bring him to the floor for a vote. It'll be 30 hours of debate. There'll be votes on the motion to proceed, which, assuming that they get 50 senators and potentially maybe one or two Democrats, we'll see, or Vice President Pence may need to break the tie, then they'll actually confirm him on a final passage. So they're going to wrap this up probably by September 28th, because October 1st is when the Supreme Court's new session.
And that's their goal.
And that is their goal, to get him on the Supreme Court when all of the new cases are before the Supreme Court.
All right, David Christensen, thanks so much
for
joining us, giving us that update. You know, what are some of the terms that you're going to be hearing next week, folks? Because, you know, you're going to hear a lot of, big words, fancy words, legal terms that are going to be used, and what does it mean? What should we be looking for? Joining us now to talk about that, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council, himself an attorney handling a lot of our religious liberty issues here. Travis, welcome back.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, so what are some of these terms that we're going to hear next week?
Yeah, we'll hear a number of terms: originalist, textualist, constitutionalist. We'll also hear terms like administrative power, executive power, executive agency power. And these are going to get thrown out there in the debate over how Brett Kavanaugh is going to rule on different issues, both looking to his record as an appeals court judge and his time in the Bush White House. The terms are going to be used to describe the type of justice that senators either do or don't want on the court. You know, what we are really looking for is a constitutionalist, an originalist, and a textualist. Now, those terms are a little bit different, but there's a lot of overlap, and they describe the same thing. Someone who's going to look at the original meaning of the Constitution, the text of the Constitution, and what those words meant at the time it was adopted.
And so that would be a textualist and an originalist.
Yes, because originalist breaks down it's in different variations and shades depending on what you're looking at, original intent or original public meaning, original plain meaning. The words at the time they were adopted is usually how we describe what we want. And so there's a little bit of difference there, but basically someone who's not a living constitutionalist.
Now, when you take, for instance, an originalist in the original intent of the Constitution, you also have to know of other writings of those who were a part of crafting the Constitution, so you kind of get a context of what they're saying.
Yeah, no, you do, and this is where there's those shades of originalism, right? Because some might emphasize the writings of the founders, the framers, other contemporary writings. Others might emphasize just the they're looking at the text of the Constitution, and then they're saying, what did this word mean at the time was adopted, right? What did it? What's most strictly, what most closely adheres to what the people of America consented to being governed by? And that's really the key.
Well, let's take, for instance, one that we work on quite frequently, the issue of religious freedom. And we look at the fact that Congress prayed, that there was, in the Constitutional Congress, they had prayer. So the idea that somehow the First Amendment would prohibit prayer, if you have an originalist view and you understand what was taking place at the time and what they meant by that, you couldn't come up with that understanding.
It's very relevant, yes, especially in the context of the Establishment Clause, where you see all sorts of bizarre claims about what it means now. It never was meant to prohibit any public expression of religion generally. It was meant to prohibit the government forcing everyone to worship according to one specific brand of faith. It never was meant to eliminate faith in the public square. So this is very, very important.
So let's juxtapose that to the other view of the Constitution, not a religious view, not a religion, an originalist view or a textualist view, but the living, breathing.
Yeah. I mean, this is how we get Roe versus Wade. When you look at the Constitution and say, well, let's really read into it and discern what we think it means, and this gives the judiciary incredible license and power to expand upon their own view of what the rights and what the Constitution means. And this is how we've gotten ourselves so far astray from what the American people agreed to be governed by. It's very harmful to the democratic and constitutional process when you take power out of the hands of the people in the states and you claim something is constitutional right when it's not. That's what disenfranchises and disillusions so many of the American public.
Some of the other terms?
We're also going to hear, as I mentioned, executive power, administrative power, agency power, because Judge Kavanaugh was very strong on ruling that the Constitution, in terms of Article 1, 2, and 3, gave certain power to certain branches of government and not to others. And he was very careful to keep in check runaway executive branch power, as he was judicial power and congressional power, and really keep them within their lanes, which is what you need in a judge.
So like agency power, that would be like the, say, EPA adopting rules that really had nobody voted on. They just adopted.
Engaging in lawmaking without unconstitutional lawmaking within right. The executive branch, yes. Also, these executive branch agencies, and there's been several of these cases that he's ruled on, An executive branch agency is created and then left to do its own thing and sort of operate independently on its own without proper constitutional authority. This is very much in violation of the Constitution. And, while in the D.C. Circuit, he had a number of good rulings in cases like the PHH Corporation case, the Free Enterprise Fund case, and others. I think Judge Kavanaugh's record is very strong.
All right, Travis Weber, as always, great to have you on the program.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. We've been talking about the terms. What are some of the issues? What are some of the things that are going to be brought up next week, both for and against Judge Kavanaugh? Kerry Severino, Chief Counsel of the Judicial Crisis Network, joins us next. Don't go away. Remember, it's Constitution Tuesday, and class is in session.
Out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting FRC.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, and yes, it's Constitution Tuesday. Class is in session. All right, the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins, let me remind you about the new app, Stand Firm. This is activism in your pocket. I mean, this will make your smartphone smarter, okay? So go to the App Store, download Stand Firm app, and go to TonyPerkins.com, follow the links over. This way you get notifications for action items that you need to take. For instance, coming up next week, as we were just talking about, Judge Brett Kavanaugh, confirmation hearing begins. Following that, the senators are all going to be voting, either for or against him, and it would be a great time for them to hear from you. But first, before we do that, we're going to hear from Carrie Severino. She's the chief counsel of the Judicial Crisis Network, been very involved in this confirmation process, educating the public. Carrie, welcome back to Washington Watch.
It's great to be here, Tony.
Carrie, let's talk a little bit. We were just talking about some of the terminology that people are going to hear next week. I want to talk a little bit about some of the issues that are going to be brought up, both, you know, trying to block the nomination as well as support the nomination. What can we expect to hear next week during this confirmation hearing?
Well, in some senses, it may be kind of a guest professor for your Constitution Tuesday, because I think one thing we'll hear coming from the judge himself, and hopefully a lot of the questions the Republican side, is talking about the proper role of a judge. And that is someone who looks at what the law is, what the Constitution is. And that means laws that were passed by Congresses you like and Congresses you don't, and presidents you like and presidents you don't, but applying it as it's written, because our constitutional system is such that it's the people's representatives that write the law, and those are the elected representatives, not the judges. They're there to simply interpret it. So I expect we'll hear him talking a lot about that role. The Democrats, right now, they're still in stirring spaghetti on the wall mode, so it's hard to know exactly what their attack is. But I suspect they'll cherry pick a few of his opinions and say, well, how could you rule against this incredibly compelling plaintiff in this case, or things like that. And he is a very articulate and thoughtful judge, so he's more than ready to sit them down and explain, I agree, this is a very challenging case, but here's why I had to do what I did, because the law requires it. And that's always what he has gone back to in his career. And it might make the Democrats a little angry, because they want someone who's going to give them the results they like. But that's not what our judges are for. They're not tooth fairies with a wish list. they're going to give you – it's not a fairy godmother. It's someone who carries out the law as written.
You know, Carrie, that's a very interesting and important distinction that you were just talking about, where you have a judge who understands the confines of the judicial branch and speaking to the fact that he is to interpret the law, not make the law. But then the opposing side of that, as you said, the Democrats are going to be appealing to specific cases, an emotional appeal. So you have this emotional appeal about, well, we should have had this outcome because didn't you feel sorry for this person? As opposed to, this is what the law dictates because this is what the representatives of the people passed and I'm just interpreting it. So you really have facts, you have constitution, you have the agreement that the American people agree to be governed by, and then you have the left basically making emotional appeals. But that there's no stability with that. And I think that's why we have the inconsistency in a lot of the legal opinions that are currently governing the country.
Yeah, there's a saying, a legal saying, bad facts make bad law. And that is to say there's cases that where you know the right legal result. It just, you feel in your gut, that can't be right. This is, that person, you know, is being wronged in this case. And that's when judges are tempted to reach beyond what the law actually says and kind of make it right for this one case. But that causes huge problems throughout the system because then you often create very bad precedent that then is applied in other cases. You know, in our system, when you're trying to fix the law, you have to go through the constitutional process and our elected representatives. We simply can't have judges who are free agents going out there making it up as they go. And, you know, that's not just because it's kind of constitutional. It also means that then we will have to rely on their gut instincts. And, you know, I don't think those are necessarily always the right ones. I don't elect these judges, and that's how our system sets it up. I elect the people who write the laws.
Right. Well, and I think you want the legal system to be as objective as possible because that's the that guarantees or at least provides for a more fair outcome in the process than you have judges that are subjectively deciding these cases.
Sure. I mean, do we want them going, oh, I can really identify with this person because they are the same race as I am or they are the same sex or religion or whatever? No, that's the opposite of a system that's fair, that's impartial. You know, that would be a horrible way to run our justice system. So while it's superficial appeal in having the, you know, the emotional response to a case, that's not really a judge's job.
Right.
And remember, in all these cases, there's also a story on the other side that's not being told. Every
sure.
legal case, there's a winner and a loser.
Right.
So everyone who's been on the court a dozen
yeah.
years, like Brett Kavanaugh, has made 50% of the people before him very unhappy.
Right.
And that's just
right.
part of the job.
Carrie Severino, any other issues that people should be watching for that are going to possibly come up next week?
Well, I hope we don't see, you know, I clerked for Justice Thomas, and the kind of ugliness of a personal attacks like that. But I'm nervous that something that they're certainly trying to dig for that. A lot of Democrats have acknowledged that they don't really have the votes to stop the nominee, and then you see unless something crazy broke, and so you're seeing them do things like FOIAing the emails from Kavanaugh's wife when she was on the city council, FOIAing the 911 calls from their house. I guess fishing expeditions, hoping maybe there's a domestic abuse issue, which you know, thank God nothing turned up. There's a group that was asking people if you went to a Nationals game, a baseball game that he was at, can you find a picture of him? Maybe something nefarious is going on there. So they're really digging deep to try to find something they can smear him with. So hopefully that is not something we're going to have to deal with. But I think that's a real possibility. And then two members of the Judiciary Committee, of course, are 2020 hopefuls, Senator Booker and Senator Harris. So I think it's very likely you'll see a lot of tirades for them, trying to each person outdo the other in who can be more apocalyptic in their imagery and,
yeah.
you know, show their liberal bona fides.
All right, Carrie Severino, I'm sure we'll be talking to you again next week as all this begins to unfold. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Great chatting with you.
Carrie Severino with the Judicial Crisis Network. I mean, the depths to which they are going to try to block this nomination reveals how significant it is. I was sharing with a pastor last night that the level of opposition always indicates the level of significance and impact. All right, when we come back, I'm going to be talking with Kelly Shackelford, who was at the White House along with me and several other evangelicals last night, again, talking about the importance of the court when it comes to religious freedom. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come on this Constitution Tuesday.
feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. And yes, it is Constitution Tuesday. Discussing all things Constitution, judicial, as we are anticipating the confirmation process, which begins next week in earnest, of Brett Kavanaugh to the Supreme Court to fill the vacancy of Anthony Kennedy. Last night, there was a dinner at the White House, which I was invited to. I was there along with about 99 other evangelical leaders and pastors from across the nation. And the president and the first lady holding a dinner, I think probably the first ever, to celebrate the evangelical leadership of the country. Here's a portion of what the president had to say last night that really encapsulates what this administration has been about when it comes to the evangelical community.
We're here this evening to celebrate America's heritage of faith, family, and freedom. As you know, in recent years, the government tried to undermine religious freedom. But the attacks on communities of faith are over. We've ended it. We've ended it.
Well, and that is, in fact, what the policies of this administration has been about, restoring the First Amendment. Really, you could almost say a revival of the First Amendment. Joining me now is Kelly Shackelford, CEO of First Liberty Institute. He was also there last night. Kelly, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Oh, happy to do it, Tony.
In the discussion last night, as the president went on to talk about the accomplishments of this administration and how the administration has been about restoring religious liberty, the courts have factored significantly into that, have they not?
It's been huge. I mean, I think as far as long-term, that's the largest long-term legacy for the First Amendment and religious freedom. I mean, we've got, I think we're at 54, 55 right now so far that have been confirmed and on the court for life. And then we have another, I think, 88 right now waiting for a vote. And if you actually look at the open seats that are waiting to be filled, it's 178. So these are long, I mean, and these are judges, many of them, who are 40, 42, 44. They're going to be there for, you know, 30 years. They're going to be there when your grandkids come up and are, who's their judge? It's going to be these people. And they're the highest quality I've ever seen. It's just I've never seen anything like the level of these people that are going on the courts. And I can give you examples. Obviously, everybody knows about Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, but I'm talking about the lower courts, the courts of appeals. These are really people committed to the Constitution, strong in their faith, brilliant lawyers, and I think people would just be thrilled if they could know the quality of the people that are being put on the court.
Well, and Kelly Shackelford, these judges that are on the, especially the circuit court, the appellate court, and obviously the Supreme Court, there's a number of cases in the pipeline. And First Liberty, we work very closely with you all on religious liberty cases. You have a number of these cases that are in the courts. I mean, you've argued that you've had cases before the Supreme Court. You have other cases that are in the pipeline before the Supreme Court. These judges matter when it comes to religious freedom.
Well, no doubt. We've got two sitting at the Supreme Court right now waiting for the next justice. One of those is the Coach Kennedy case. He's the coach who was fired because after the football game was over, when they go to the center of the field, he actually went to a knee for 15 to 20 seconds to simply give thanks to God for the privilege of coaching those young men. And he was fired for that. And, of course, now Bobby Bowden, Tony Dungy, I mean, the coaches from all around the country have come to his side. But he's lost every step of the way because there are people who want to change, you know, free speech and free exercise of religion to something that I don't think any of us would recognize. So we're dependent upon the Supreme Court, or Coach Kennedy is going to have no ability to do anything about what happened to him, and every other coach is going to be in danger. And that's just one. We got the Bladensburg Veterans Memorial right outside of D.C., which currently is going to be ordered to be torn down after 100 years if we don't get the Supreme Court to overturn that. So, and it's, you know, the American Humanists filed a lawsuit because that memorial is a cross. Well, we have crosses in veterans cemeteries all over the country, and the idea that we're going to have to bulldoze and tear down our veterans memorials would just be outrageous. But again, that is the ruling if the Supreme Court doesn't do something about it. And that's why people like, Brett Kavanaugh will be really important on those issues.
And, of course, the judges that the president appoints have to be confirmed by the Senate elected by the American people. This is why, in part, the midterm elections are so important. People need to be voting. They may not be happy with Congress, but I think they should be happy with what the administration is doing, especially when it comes to the issue of religious freedom. And all of that hangs in the balance if the president is not able to continue to put strict constructionist constitutionalists on the courts.
There's no doubt. We've got, I can say this with confidence because this is my area, and I've been working on these judges the last 2 years to try to help make sure that we were getting really good judges. This is never – the quality of the judges we are getting on the court right now has never happened before. The politics has been taken out of it. They've decided we want really good, top-notch judges who are not going to be politicians, who are going to follow the words of the statutes, going to follow the words of the Constitution. And that's all up to the Senate. The Senate has to confirm. And right now, as everybody knows, it's 51-49. And so the elections will decide whether that will come to a screeching halt or whether that will continue. And that's what the midterms are about.
All right. Kelly Shackelford, as always, great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. Kelly Shackelford, to find out more about First Liberty, go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and follow the links over. All right. When we come back, we will continue Constitution Tuesday with Ken Klukowski and questions about the Constitution. That's next. Don't go away. Class is in session.
Feel out of touch with what's going on in our nation's capital? Do you want to make a difference this summer? Well, now you can. Family Research Council's Stand Firm mobile app is a new tool that is bringing Christians across America together in advancing faith, family, and freedom. The unique features of the app allow you to contact your congressman on important issues with just the tap of a screen, sign up to organize culture impact teams in churches across the country, and share the latest legislative alerts with family and friends. You can listen to Washington Watch live with Tony Perkins or read the daily Washington Update to stay engaged and informed on issues facing our country. Join now in building a network of activists as we stand firm together for His kingdom. Go to frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today. Again, that's frc.org/app and download the Stand Firm app today.
With everything that's going on in the world, it's easy to feel out of the loop. Here at Family Research Council, we want to help you stay informed on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. Get access to information fast by visiting our website and connecting with us on social media. Always be in the know by following us on Twitter, Instagram, and watching us live on Facebook. Download our app to access our FRCA's voter guide and contact your congressman with just a tap of the screen. You can also listen to Washington Watch Live with Tony Perkins and read the Daily Washington Update to stay engaged on the issues facing our country today. Have questions? Contact us anytime by visiting frc.org. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that. So what are you waiting for? Get the information you need to make a difference for biblical values and connect with FRC today. It's time to take a stand, and FRC can help you do just that.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Welcome back. This is Washington Watch, and it's Constitution Tuesday, and class is in session. All right, joining me now, Ken Klukowski, best-selling author, senior counsel, and director of strategic affairs for First Liberty Institute, and a fellow and senior legal analyst with the American Civil Rights Union, and a former FRC-er, and a great guy. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Oh, it's great to be with you, Tony. Thanks.
All right. Thanks. I'm going to sort of call you professor since class is in session and we're doing a little teaching here on the
And I formerly was on faculty at Liberty University at the law school there. So, yeah, sure. Absolutely. Go ahead.
All right. And so two professors here. So two professors walk into it. No, that's wrong. All right. Let's talk about the Bill of Rights. Okay, let's talk about the significance of the Bill of Rights and why they're important and what role they play.
Well, absolutely. It's one of the things that, I think possibly my biggest wish list regarding the education system in this nation is that I wish there was a robust curriculum for teaching the Declaration of Independence and the U.S. Constitution to our children every single year, so that by the time they become adults at age 18, they have a firm grasp and a detailed grasp of what our form of government is, and that it would inform them for the rest of their lives as voters and as citizens in terms of what they look for in candidates and what they hold those in power accountable for. Now, the tie there to the Bill of Rights is that when the U.S. Constitution was adopted, it was written in 1787, it was ratified in 1789, there was no Bill of Rights in the original Constitution. That's why what we call the Bill of Rights is actually the first 10 amendments added
now,
to the Constitution.
And to provide a little context, a lot of these issues during the process in which there were the debates about the Constitution, these were some of the issues that were raised. And this was a part of addressing those concerns in the Constitution, correct?
That's exactly right. The framers, the whole idea, originally when in 1789, when the Constitution was ratified and the first Congress was elected, the first House and the first Senate, and of course George Washington as our first president, there was James Madison was running for a seat in the first Congress, in the House of Representatives, for that very first time. And his opponent in his election was another one of the Founding Fathers, James Monroe. And Monroe was running on the idea of a Bill of Rights, because Madison had been the primary author of the U.S. Constitution. There was a whole convention, of course, but he was the primary draftsman who actually put words to paper, one of the greatest attorneys of his generation. And the point that he made was that he said, no, there's no need for a Bill of Rights. He said, look, we are making a strictly limited federal government, and the Constitution spells out exactly what the powers of the government are, what the role of government of the federal government is, and anything that's not explicitly covered in this U.S. Constitution stays with the people in their sovereignty through their own state governments. And he said, so you don't need a Bill of Rights, he said, because we're making a rather narrow government here. And James Monroe ran a whole campaign on it where he said, if you elect me to Congress, I'm going to write this Bill of Rights. Now, they didn't have polling back then, Tony, but James Madison got the feel that he might actually be losing this congressional election. And so he switched himself, he reversed, he flip-flopped, maybe the first flip-flop in American politics. Halfway through the congressional campaign, he said, fine, if you elect me to Congress, not only will I vote for this Bill of Rights, I'll actually write it myself. Madison ended up beating Monroe by barely over 100 votes, without which James Madison would never have been in the Congress, and once he was there, he was true to his word, and he wrote the First Amendment with free speech and religious liberty. He wrote
well,
the Second Amendment,
and
all of these.
And
things.
I've talked about this before on the program. In fact, I think I talked about it last week. But I had a unique opportunity a few years ago down to go to the archives and to go into what they call the vault, where the uncirculated documents are. And was able to hold, obviously within the protective stuff, but the markup of the Bill of Rights that came from the House to the Senate. And there were actually 17 originally that came from the House to the Senate.
The first two
dealing with congressional districts and one congressional pay. First rejected. The second one actually wasn't adopted until 1992, I think they said,
right,
by the U.S. mail, so it got delayed. that was a joke. But if you're a postman, please don't write me. I would.
And Benjamin Franklin was the first postmaster general, and we all have great respect for him.
The first amendment, which was a standalone amendment dealing with individual rights, was the freedom of religion and rights of conscience.
Yes.
That had nothing to do with the media. That had nothing to do with speech. Those were subsequent amendments of the 17. Now, the Senate dropped a few, combined others, and came up with 12.
With 12.
So two were not, right, and two were
right,
not ratified, and you ended up with the 10.
Exactly.
So quick history
right,
lesson. But the point there that I was making, the most significant, which was the standalone dealing with personal rights, individual rights, was religion.
That's exactly right. And once they got into a discussion, and again, Madison was a fan of all of these liberties, but he just said, guys, we don't need a Bill of Rights because the federal government, look, we don't mention religion in the body as the federal government having power over religion. We don't mention the federal government having power over your right to own a gun. We don't mention free speech, you know, that the government can censor your speech. So if we're not giving the federal government power over these things, you don't need to worry about them ever encroaching upon it, and that's why you don't need a Bill of Rights. And again, it was as brilliant as Madison was. No one has a batting average of 1,000. Obviously, he never foresaw the enormous size to which the federal government would grow and try to burden every area of human life. And so when they decided that they needed to do, when he reversed himself and there was a huge outcry in the nation to have a Bill of Rights, That's how they picked which rights to put in there, is what they did is they looked back over the past 30 years, over the American colonies and now American states' interaction with the British government, and they checked to see which of our rights, our natural rights, have been violated by England. And right up there at the top was religious liberty. Every provision in the Bill of Rights was a response to an abuse that had happened to the American colonies during their decades-long relationship with Britain. And there you had the Church of England that said that you could not preach doctrines that the Church of England disagreed with. And, of course, the monarch, the King of England, is the head of the Church of England. You couldn't preach without a license. You could have mandatory attendance,
right,
that you had to attend churches that the government approved of, mandatory tithes through taxes for just the government's preferred. And so all of these provisions in the Bill of Rights, we got those in response to specific government abuses that Americans had experienced.
All right. Take a breath, Ken. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Constitution Tuesday as class is in session. Professor Ken Klukowski with me talking about the Bill of Rights. Ken, envision for just a moment what the country would look like today had we not had the Bill of Rights and if we do not aggressively defend those Bill of Rights.
Oh, goodness. Well, I'll tell you, the certain provisions in the Constitution, the main body of the Constitution, that gives certain powers to the federal government, those have been misinterpreted by the Supreme Court in some of its most liberal years over the past 100 years, have been misinterpreted to be so radically broad that it covers just about every possible area of life. And I mean, and we saw the absurd heights of it in the first big Obamacare decision in 2012, NFIB versus Sebelius, with the individual mandate, where the federal government claimed that the power to regulate interstate commerce includes the power to tell a private individual, a citizen, whether or not he has to actually get into commerce, and that once he's in there, then the federal government can actually control him. Because, of course, with the individual mandate, it was that you had to buy health insurance that had certain features that the federal government approved of. And Justice Scalia, in one of his famous lines during oral argument, and I was there in the courtroom, said, "Yo, can the federal government command you to buy broccoli and eat 3 servings a day because it's likely to make you healthier, and then you're less likely to need medical care, and so therefore it impacts the interstate market on medicine, on health care?" And Barack Obama's Solicitor General, Donald Verrilli, he hemmed and hawed. But he could never disagree with that statement, that in fact the federal government was claiming absolutely unlimited power, since every decision we make, you know, it's either commercial or it's not. If that includes the power that the government can tell you, no, you're not going to sit on your couch, you're going to go buy a hamburger because it impacts our ability to regulate the interstate market on beef. You're going to go buy broccoli. You're going to eat broccoli so that you buy more of it because all that impacts the broccoli market. And your health determines how much medicine you need, and we're claiming the authority to regulate the interstate market on health care. When you layer those things one on top of another, at some point, every aspect of life is actually covered by it. That is the authority that the federal government has claimed, and that mercifully was defeated at the U.S. Supreme Court. But I have to say, that claim of power, that claim of unlimited power under the Commerce Clause, only failed by a single vote. Everyone on the right, you know, of course, has criticized Chief Justice John Roberts for saying that the Obamacare individual mandate was a tax. But in doing so, many of them who are not lawyers missed the first part of his decision. The first part of his decision is where he sided with all the conservative justices and with Justice Anthony Kennedy, the moderate, to have five votes to shoot down the government's, the Obama administration's argument about the unlimited power that it had under the Commerce Clause. And he said, no, 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 you cannot have that kind of unlimited power. Then he flipped on a dime and said, but this provision is okay as a tax. So it was a real train wreck of a decision. But there was a power grab in 2012 where the federal government almost claimed power over every authority of life. And if that had succeeded, then the only liberties that an American citizen would have are just the few things that are specifically specified in our Bill of Rights.
So, Ken Klukowski, the point here being that this is an ongoing effort to try to expand the Constitution in terms of the rights and what it covers and everything by the left. I mean, they see it as a living, breathing document, and they want to use it to grab power. And that's why having judges like Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, this is something that every American who cares about the Constitution and their freedoms should be dialed into and paying attention to. And because we are a republic, which is a participatory project, they need to be speaking out on these things.
Absolutely. I mean, Ronald Reagan famously said in his rendezvous with Destiny speech in the 1960s that freedom is always only a single generation away from extinction. You know, the founding fathers said that that the price of freedom is eternal vigilance. And yet the tendency of government is to expand, and it is to consume. The framers of our Constitution understood that. That's why they gave us a written Constitution to limit the powers of government, to specify what those limits were so that the government couldn't cross them. And then, as we've been talking today, in a belt and suspenders approach, they added a Bill of Rights to it as well, to say that even if you're ignoring all these other limits, we want to highlight that you also have all of these rights that people have and that you can't violate those either. A democratic republic only endures if people are willing to fight for it, if they are willing to be vigilant in their time and to hold those in power and those seeking power accountable.
Right.
And those are cornerstones of our constitutional system.
All right. Ken Klukowski, as always, great to have you on, Professor.
Thanks for having me, Tony. God bless.
All right. Ken Klukowski, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Great to have Ken on. He's a wealth of knowledge. Look, this is not a spectator sport. This is about being participants. The republic. If you want a government that honors your rights and your freedoms, that upholds the Constitution, courts are a key part of it. We've got to be involved. We've got to be involved in speaking to our elected representatives and speaking out on these issues, and that's why we have Constitution Tuesday. All right, folks, out of time for today, but I want to thank you for joining us, and I want to encourage you to download the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store, Stand Firm app, or go to TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you've taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.